Today, will the market hammer fall? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news, and this is our weekly market update. Well, as I said recently, being data dependent means higher volatility as markets swing from bullish to bearish and back. While in Australia, the bulls ran hard on Friday, later Wall Street experienced a significant and notable downturn as investors responded to the news of a strike by the United Auto Workers against leading automakers Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. The US manufacturing output actually also barely rose in August amid a decline in motor vehicle production before any industrial action starts. The risk is that action broadens over coming days, said Michael Pierce, lead US economist at Oxford Economics. We estimate a total walkout could reduce motor vehicle output by over 30%, which will begin to show up in the September report. And a separate report from the Labor Department on Friday showed import prices increased 0.5% in August as the cost of fuels accelerated after nudging up 0.1% in July. But import prices declined 3% in the 12 months through August after decreasing 4.6% in July. And annual import prices notched up their seventh straight monthly drop. Oil prices continue to climb, notching their third consecutive weekly gain on supply tightness, as well as optimism that the Chinese economy might be gaining some strength. And of course, the market's reaction also reflected the anticipated Federal Reserve decision due next week. The highlight of economic data, though, on Friday was the preliminary September consumer sentiment reading from the University of Michigan. The reading was 67.7, which was lower than the 69.1. expected. And adding to the volatility was the fact that piles of derivatives contracts tied to stocks, index options, and futures all expired on Friday, compelling traders to roll over their existing positions or to start new ones. This time it coincided with the rebalancing of benchmark indices, including the S&P 500, which was another catalyst for yet more share transactions. Option expiration forced people to adjust their positions, and this is an especially powerful expiration that can add fuel to market moves, Callie Cox at eToro said. This is especially prevalent in individual stocks where trading in the shares and options can be thin, so brace for swings, but try not to tap out of this market until we see convincing evidence of recession. And even the VIX, which as I've explained is not a very good or valid guide these days after sliding nearly 5% on Thursday to its lowest close since mid-January 2020, surged on Friday. It was 7.6% higher to 1379, but of course it contains data relating to long-term options, and these days more options are very short-term. Onda's Eb Moyer said that there was a raft of headwinds, including nervousness over how long the UAW strike will last, concerns the AI trade was too optimistically priced in, and on the day's $4 trillion US triple witching options event. Nothing screams bear market in conviction more than money market funds seeing $1 trillion of inflows year to date, Bank of America investment strategist Michael Harnett said in the note, just to compound the confusion. We think markets may rally into the first negative US payroll print, but this will likely be followed by a slump on second negative payroll prints. And in the latest weekly flow report, investors showed that there is no consensus yet. The funds data tracked by Bank of America showed that $25.3 billion flowed into global stocks in the week through September the 13th. That's the most since March 2022. And $26.4 billion flowed into US equities alone, Mr. Harnett said. It was a sign that confidence in a soft landing was rising. US junk-rated companies are using a more favorable debt issuance window this year to extend billions of dollars of short-term liabilities, and they are doing so at a high cost, which will weigh on their margins and interest coverage ratios over the coming quarters, said a report by Morgan Stanley. The amount of junk bonds and loans due in 2024 has roughly halved over the course of 2023 by $70 billion, with the overall debt load due by the end of the year 25 down nearly 35% compared to the year-end 2022 levels, the report said. 12 high-yield issuers have raised $9.6 billion this week alone, making it the busiest week since November 2021, according to JP Morgan. Through to the end of August, 129 junk-rated borrowers raised $111 billion in new bonds. 90 of those borrowers used the money raised to refinance, the report noted. And despite the progress in addressing very near-term maturities, the proportion of debt due within 3 years remains elevated versus history, the report said. And Mohammed Al-Arian is warning that a swathe of corporations will be hurt by those higher interest rates when they have to refinance next year. If you look at high yield, if you look at commercial real estate, there's massive refinancing that needs to be done next year. Massive, he said on Bloomberg. But that's the point of pain, which is going to start to happen. There's a tug of war going on between those who think inflation and interest rates are going to come down and the Fed is going to start cutting rates next year, and those who believe that inflation is going to stay well above the Fed target for a while and therefore rates will stay higher for longer, said Chuck Carlson, Chief Executive Officer at Horizon Investment Services. Financial markets have actually priced in a 97% likelihood that the central bank will hold the Fed fund rates at 5.25 to 5.5% when it announces its decision next Wednesday, and there's a 68.5% likelihood of it doing the same at the conclusion of its November meeting. If we get a pause in September and November, that could lead to a nice year-end rally, which will feed the belief that the next move by the Fed will be a rate cut in 2024, said Rob Havoc, Senior Portfolio Manager at Dakota Wealth. A monthly survey by Bank of America released earlier this week showed that 74% of fund managers expect no hard landing or soft landing, with 6 out of 10 predicting the Fed has done with hikes, compared with 9 out of 10 predicting more hikes in July. So you can see that there are lots of opinions out there and nobody really knows. Anyway, all three US major stock indices closed deep in the red on Friday, with chip makers weighing on the tech-laden NASDAQ. After surging 25% in its trading debut the previous session, ARM Holdings fell 4.5% amid the broad sell-off in New York. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 0.83% to 34,618. The S&P 500 lost 1.22% to 4,450, and the NASDAQ Composite dropped 1.56% to 13,708. So for the week, the S&P 500 fell 0.2%, the NASDAQ lost 0.4%, and the Dow added just 0.1%. Treasury yields rose ahead of the Federal Reserve policy meeting next week, with two-year yields edging above 5% once again, amid worries that restrictive interest rates will be in place for longer than expected, and benchmark 10-year notes fell 10/32nds in price to yield 4.3304% from 4.29% late on Thursday. The dollar inched lower against a basket of world currencies, but nabbed its 9th straight weekly gain. The dollar index fell 0.08%, and the euro was up 0.16% to 1.0658. The long-term trajectory of the Federal Reserve's benchmark rate, the Fed's fund rate, through to September 2027, is also under scrutiny. Despite a minor uptick in near-term expectations, there's a prevailing belief that the Fed may not be done with rate adjustments. An additional increase of 25 or 50 basis points is considered possible before a downward turn begins, indicating possibly rate cuts later in 2024, but we'll see. The City Economic Surprise Index, which tracks data surprises relative to market expectations right back to 2003, shows elevated levels compared to historical data. And the Federal Reserve's total balance sheet is around $8 trillion now, down from approximately $9.5 trillion. This decrease is seen as a substantial drag on the economy. The Fed's stance on quantitative tightening and its impact on the economy is expected to be a key topic of discussion during the upcoming meeting. Gold prices experienced a rebound on Friday following a three-week low earlier in the week. This recovery was spurred by US inflation reports that indicated a reacceleration of inflation in August, but possibly not significant enough to cause immediate concern for the Federal Reserve or the markets. Despite the fluctuations through the week, gold concluded the week approximately at the same level it started. Crude oil prices hit a fresh 10-month high of $94.26 a barrel for Brent futures and $91.20 a barrel for US crude. Chevron is expected to struggle to sustain its LNG exports after a second consecutive day of loading bans on shipments from its Gorgon and Wheatstone projects amid industrial action and a technical fault. So keep an eye for rising LNG prices, another potential inflation driver. Over in Europe, European shares marked gains on Friday as better-than-expected Chinese data lifted luxury firms, while investors took comfort from signs that the European Central Bank is nearly done raising interest rates. European stocks had recorded their biggest percentage gain in 6 months on Thursday after the ECB raised its key interest rate to a record high of 4%, but with the Eurozone economy in the doldrums, signalled that the hike was likely to be its last, well, maybe. The pan-European stock 600 rose 0.2% to close at a five-week high, with luxury, mining and autos leading the sector gains. The stock 600 added 1.6% of the week, and miners were the top performers. However, policymakers on Friday said the central bank will keep interest rates high for an extended period and could even raise them again if needed, pushing back on some market bets that Eurozone rates might start falling as soon as next spring. It was never expected that the ECB would call the end of the hiking cycle, said Bas van Geffen, senior macro strategist at Rabobank. For one, the inflation outlook looks far too uncertain to say this with confidence, and preemptively calling it quits could cost the ECB its credibility. The DAX closed up 0.56%, the CAC 40 in France was up 0.96%, and the FTSE in London rose by 0.5% to close at 7,711. In the currency market, sterling dropped by 0.21% against the dollar to 1.2383 and fell against the euro. The Aussie was a little stronger against the pound at 51.93. Most Asian stocks rose sharply on Friday as China rolled out yet more measures to support economic growth, while markets continued to bet that the Federal Reserve would hold interest rate next week. Regional markets also took a positive lead in from Wall Street as strong inflation and retail sales data pointed to continued resilience in the world's largest economy. Technology stocks in particular saw a stellar rally as sentiment towards the sector was boosted by a heavily oversubscribed initial public offering by chip designer Arm Holdings. Arm's parent, Japanese tech conglomerate SoftBank Group, rose over 2% in Tokyo trade, helping the Nikkei 225 to go 1.1% higher. And in fact, the index hit a 2.5-month high and was within sight of its 33-year peak. Tech-heavy bourses were also the best performers in Asia on Friday, with South Korea's KOSPI up 1.1%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng added 1%. India's Nifty 50 hit a series of record highs this week, driven by improving sentiment towards the Indian economy and heavy technology exposure, which were the key drivers of the Nifty's rally this year. Broader Asian markets rose as the People's Bank of China cut its reserve ratio requirements for local lenders by a further 25 basis points. That's its second move this year. The cut's expected to unlock more liquidity in the Chinese economy, potentially shoring up growth. But Chinese markets lag their peers, with the Shanghai Composite down 0.28% to 3,117. Data released on Friday showed that Chinese industrial production and retail sales grew more than expected in August, but fixed asset investment declined, while new home sales also slumped, indicating that large portions of Asia's largest economy still remain under pressure. The data released on Friday by China's National Bureau of Statistics exceeded expectations for a 3.9% increase in a poll of analysts and marked the quickest rate since April. Chinese industrial production rose past expectations in August as improving local demand and a continued stream of monetary support from the government helped spur some recovery in the sector. Industrial production rose 4.5% in August from the prior year, and the reading was higher than expectations of 4% and more than the 3.7% rise seen in July. Production for the year to August rose marginally as expected to 3.9% from 3.8% of the prior month, but a bulk of August positive reading was driven by a low basis for comparison, given that China still had large parts of the country under COVID in 2022. China's manufacturing sector is still struggling with slowing activity, particularly amid slowing overseas demand for Chinese goods. But a private survey released earlier this month showed that improving local demand was indeed helping to spur new business for manufacturers. Other data also showed that the Chinese consumption was recovering, with retail sales rising 4.6% in August, up much more than the expectation of 3%, and the prior month's growth of 2.5%. But year-to-date retail growth still weakened to 6.98% in August from 7.33% in July. China's employment rate improved slightly to 5.2% in August from 5.3% in the prior month, but growth in fixed asset investment, which represents capital spending by big business, slowed to 3.2% in August from 3.4% in July, reflecting continued caution over China's economic prospects. People's Bank of China lowered the reserve requirement ratio by another 25 basis points to repeat an act from March that brought the weighted average for the so-called RRR of banks to 7.4% this time. The move essentially reduces the mandatory cash minimum that banks need to hold in reserve so that they can do more lending to the private sector, which in turn the Xi Jinping government hopes will result in trickle-down economics that encourages more spending by real people. The amount of money that will be freed up will be around 500 billion yuan, or about $69 billion, according to an estimate by analysts at New York-based Bespoke Investment Group. The question almost everyone outside the Chinese Communist Party is asking, of course, is whether this will be adequate to shore up the economy from its worst challenge in decades. Take the nation's gross domestic product, for example. If lucky, China's GDP will exceed 5% this year versus the record growth of 11.8% back in 2020. Essentially, what happens with the Chinese economy down the road is far more important than any energy, metals, or grains rally of today. That's simply because a continuously underperforming GDP will come back to rear end any commodities rally. This will not yet do it for Xi's government, says those who've benchmarked the CCP's efforts against hard targets they say need to be met in order to move the needle for an economy the size of China. But a second nibble at the RRR cake was a bite in the right direction, they say, although what would help rally are more and larger chomps. The China Central Bank, for instance, said round two of the bank stimulus aspires, among other things, to create an appropriate monetary and financial environment to promote effective demand in the real economy. We'll see. Australian shares have traded largely sideways for 5 months, but the ASX 200 closed at 7,279 points on Friday. That's up 1.3%, sealing the best one-day return since July, before the annual profit reporting season recast expectations for 2024 earnings. The benchmark ASX 200 sealed a weekly gain of 1.7%, and the All Ords rose 1.3% on Friday too. Miners from gold to lithium and iron ore were clear outperformers as heavyweights Rio Tinto, BHP and Fortescue Metals rallied to a six-month high for the iron ore price of nearly $123 a ton in Singapore. That's the highest level since April. Rio Tinto climbed 3% to $118.90 and posted the biggest weekly increase since November 2022. BHP Group was up 3.5% to $45.68 and Fortescue 4% to $21.22. It has stormed almost 10% higher this week. Qantas shares edged up 0.4% to $5.61, defying another blow by the competition watchdog. The ACCC has denied Qantas the right to tie up with China Eastern Airlines, saying the collaboration would give the airline too much power to drive up prices. Woodside rose 1.3% to $38.39. The oil and gas company delayed again a seismic survey of its $16.5 billion Scarborough LNG project in Western Australia after a federal court decision to grant an injunction on the start of the work. Fortescue Metals and Rio Tinto were up 9.7% to $21.22 and 7.5% respectively over the past five trading days. And Ramsay Health Care edged up 0.2% to $51.61 despite Fitch Ratings credit downgrade to BBB- due to elevated debt levels. Wholesaler retailer Metcash dipped 0.5% to $3.70 after reporting a small 1.7% gain in total group sales as the increased cost of living curbed shoppers' spending. And gold miner Ramelius Resources jumped 6.1% after reporting what it claimed were encouraging results from its Penny Mine site. And Alliance Aviation Services added 0.6% following a five-year contract extension with BHP Iron Ore. And one analyst said, it's been a very uncertain period of trading for the ASX 200. And of course, we haven't had those tech stocks, which have been hugely influential in the US markets. Russell Chesler, head of investments at Van Eyck, said that while the strong US data and the move from the ECB had some predicting Australian rates had peaked too, he was waiting until the release of wage inflation figures due in October as the next important indicator. We still think there is one more rate rise to come in Australia, but from the look of things, I think Australia would probably have a soft landing, he said. We are in a bit of a holding pattern, but it's definitely positive news from overseas. And the Aussie was at 64.32 up slightly against the US dollar. Now, outgoing Reserve Bank Governor Philip Lowe told RBA staff on Friday, that's his last day at the central bank, he said that he aimed to get his golf handicap below 10, and I expect to reach that goal before inflation returns to the 2% target range. He will be succeeded by Michelle Bullock on Monday, who received his glass half-full mug, a symbol of the transition. And finally, Bitcoin has been subject to various price predictions as the next block subsidy halving approaches, expected to occur perhaps in April 2024. The halving, an event which reduces miner rewards earned per block by 50% every 4 years, is noted for a significant impact on Bitcoin's price performance. On Friday, BitQuant, a popular social media commentator on the platform X, just did a bullish outlook for Bitcoin. They predicted a halving target above 69,000 US and a post-halving target of, wait for it, $250,000 per coin. Yes, it's going to reach a new high before halving, BitQuant stated. However, not all market participants share BitQuant's optimism. Last month, Bitcoin investor and author Jesse Myers dismissed any notion that Bitcoin will be trading at six figures before the next halving. And in a similar vein, FlipFlip, co-founder of Trading Suite Descend Trader, offered a more conservative pre-halving Bitcoin price of 46,000 US in an interview on Cointelegraph, assuming no black swan event, around 35,000 by the end of the year, and possibly as high as 46,000 sometime pre-halving in the first quarter of 2024, he said. And another trader on X, Rick Capital, shared a graph indicating that Bitcoin's current price are within the expected pre-halving range. According to his chart, Bitcoin still has room to fall and to remain within that range. And he also suggested that a bearish fractal forming could present a lucrative opportunity for traders in preparation for the post-halving rally. It's all mumbo jumbo, really, isn't it? Anyway, as at Friday, Bitcoin was trading at around 26,500, up 1.3% in September so far. And meanwhile, Litecoin was trading at 65.45, up 1.7% in the last week, still finding its footing after its most recent halving event. As the next Bitcoin halving approaches, market participants continue to speculate on the potential impact on Bitcoin's price. However, as you've seen, those predictions widely vary, reflecting the inherent uncertainty and volatility in the cryptocurrency market. But I'd say to you that that volatility and uncertainty is true more broadly across the markets, where some are still quite convinced that rates won't go higher, others believe there's more upside, and of course the inflationary pressures starting to build as oil prices continue to rise. So the level of uncertainty is reaching some sort of crescendo just in time for market corrections, which quite often happen through September and October. So watch this space. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.